Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Difficulties. We Talk Productions. This is We Talk Productions that's going to present Black Urban America tonight. Black Urban America airs on Tuesdays from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. We have Provocative Thought, which airs on Saturday from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. And Thursday evening, one Thursday out of the month, we have Shields of a Nation, which airs on Thursday, the last Thursday of each month from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. And starting in a week or two, we have a new show called Birth to Life about child development. And that will be coming on Fridays at 8 o'clock. Also, We Talk Productions is seeking advertisers and sponsors so we can make progress and give you a more clear and better show, a more up-technical show. Now, tonight's guest. Now, hold up. You know, for the past 2 weeks, we have been hearing about all the trouble that's happening on the border, about children being separated from their families, about individuals being turned back and turned away, about border agents breaking rights of human beings. Tonight's guest is in the middle of the fight. Her organization advocates, educates, and organizes immigrants and allied community to spread awareness about the issues that affect immigrants in Jackson, Mississippi, that is. But, you know, what are the immigration laws? How do they want to change it? Why are they separating families? Why it seems that this is a clear definition of more, I hate to say it, racism by this administration. But tonight, this young lady comes from the Mississippi Immigrants Rights Allies, that she is in the middle of the fight helping people that are trying to enter this country for a better life. And her name is Ms. Melinda Medina. Melinda, are you there?
Hello, everybody. Hello. Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. I know that you just came from a meeting with HUD. How did that meeting go?
Oh, that meeting went really well. We got a lot of useful information out there and a lot of information also in Spanish for the community, for the Latino community. You know, and there's also other information available in different other languages for other immigrant communities as well. So it was really great information, and I was really proud to be a part of that meeting.
Now, Melinda.
Yes.
What is exactly, I know that you are on the front lines, what is exactly that is going on? From your observations, what is going on the border?
Okay, well, there's a lot going on the border right now, as it seems. But the most, the thing that's actually going on is these children are being separated from their parents who are trying to come to our country, right, or who have come to our country without authorization to be able to request amnesty, right? So what used to happen before is that during, like, the Obama administration, when they had unaccompanied minors, it was usually they were coming unaccompanied without their parents. So this new set of unaccompanied minors is because the zero tolerance policy that Sessions introduced, right, that he implemented, is now separating the children from their parents. So these children came with their parents. And then the U.S. declares them unaccompanied after they rip them out of their parents' arms and then detain them in separate housing centers. Right?
I just want to know why. Why are they taking children away from their parents? I mean, like, if you go sit them back, just sit them back. Why separate the family?
Right. So the reason why they're separate, the reason why this administration says that they're separating these families is because, you know, to stop human trafficking and to see if they can verify if these parents are actually the parents of these children. But you and I both know that American policies have always engaged in this type of practice, right? Since, like, the very beginning of the founding of this country, they have ripped and torn families apart, right? For nothing other than because they can and they will. That's the idea, right?
Well, they did that to the African population during slavery. So, yeah, you're not, and they still are doing this in many cities around the country, separating children from their families in the name of providing treatment or services.
Exactly. you're exactly right. So they've been doing this all across the country. This is something that they engage in all minority families, right? So they're basically right now, these immigrant children are coming from places like El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, right? They're coming, and they are being ripped out of their parents' arms in the name of safety, in the name of whatever else that they want to call it. But they are tearing these families apart, and they are taking them from parents who are trying to do what's in the best interest of their family, because nobody takes on that journey, okay? And I'm talking about a journey that takes days, sometimes even weeks, where they journey out of their country, sometimes by foot, sometimes by train, sometimes by vehicle, but they have to cross through the desert or they have to cross through the river by foot, right? So, I mean, nobody takes on these journeys unless they're really fleeing from something, right, from danger. And then they are told, right, back in their countries, they see, you know, that they're told they believe in this American dream, right, that people have painted all over the world, that coming to America, they're going to help you come to America, you know, you're going to be fine. And then they turn themselves into these border agents who then engage in the practice of tearing these families apart and housing them in detention centers and sending the children off to different shelters, right? So I've been witness to some of these personal stories here in Mississippi where parents have been ripped apart at the border and some of these children haven't seen their mothers for many months. And the last thing that they've seen their parents is that crying and suffering, right? So a lot of them, when they're released too, are also very traumatized from what has just gone on. And it's really
how's
sad
the
all the
environment,
way
around. How is the environment in those centers for the children? I mean, are they being fed adequately? Are they being housed properly? Do everybody have their own beds? Are they sleeping on floors? What were some of the conditions of the some of the condition in the environment for the kids?
Yeah, so the conditions for the kids, like we've seen pictures, right, of some of these children sleeping in cots, some of them being blanketed with these blankets that look like aluminum foil. So we know that in the ice box, in La Hilera, right, is what they call it, that's all they're getting is when they house them for that one day while they're being, you know, at the border right there. They're sent to the ice box. They're there with their parents most of the time. And they're being, it's cold in there, so they have these aluminum foil blankets. These shelters would be like any other shelter, right, for children. They have cots. And they're feeding the food. It would be, you know, I haven't been inside a shelter myself, so I really can't explain to you what it looks like or what it's like. But from the stories that I have read and I have been told, is, you know, they're not used to the type of food that they're eating, right? Their culture, the different types of food that they eat is different. Some of
right.
these countries are very rich in fruits, right? They're very different things. And a lot of the food that they eat is fresh, correct? So
mm-hmm.
in here, we have a lot of processed food. So sometimes they get sick, right? Because they're just not used to that type of eating, or they don't eat at all because they just don't like it. Boys and girls are separate from each other, and they're not allowed to touch, right? So I was just reading a story the other day from the New York Times where there was a little girl who had been released from detention from the shelter after her mother had been released from detention. And during the reunification process, right, which has taken some time for her to adjust after being released from detention, she has a hard time with other little children that are of different sex, right? So she has a little hard time with little boys trying to play with her. She wants them to stay away from her because that's what she was told. And you hear other children talk about how they were told that if they didn't behave, that they would never go see their parents again ever, that they'd be housed in there forever. Some of these siblings
wow.
were housed together in the, yeah. Some of these siblings were housed together in the same shelters, right? And they were not allowed to hug each other or communicate with each other in any form like a brother and a sister would out in the free world, right? So
sound like jail.
I mean, it's very
exactly
like jail. It's not kind of. It's exactly like jail. And, I mean, so you hear about adults being placed in solitary confinement, right? What that does to the chemistry in an adult brain. So imagine a young child, right, age 6, age 7, who contracts chickenpox, okay? And so they put him in solitary confinement for 3 weeks, right, 2 to 3 weeks. Could you, I mean, he can't come out to play with anybody, can't touch nobody, so you're bored. And once he got bored enough and decided to venture out of the room, they put a cage through so he couldn't get out, right? So just think about what that does to an adult person and what that, how much worse that is for a child.
Dramatization. Dramatized. The kid's going to be dramatized.
Absolutely. And so then they, I mean, you hold them in there, they're confined. Another little boy who had contacted, he got a pink eye. And for 3 days, you know, he couldn't talk to nobody, couldn't touch nobody. So those, and these shelters are not set up for that type of confinement, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they use, like, small play areas to confine them. And it's just really terrible, the things that you're hearing.
Wow, that sounds like borderline child abuse to me. That sounds like borderline child abuse to me. I'm sorry.
It absolutely is.
Shame,
and it's our government who's absolutely, yeah. I mean, it is a big shame that our government has engaged in this type of atrocity, right? I mean, But like I said, I go back to the very founding of America. America's history is racist. And that is what this country was founded on, right?
Right.
It totally wiped out a whole nation of,
culture.
Of indigenous
a whole
exactly.
culture. And they did it with smallpox.
Of indigenous
they
people.
Did it with violence. They did it with rape. The history of how this country was taken is against human rights.
It absolutely is. It's against human rights, and it is formed by the mentality of superiority, right?
Mm-hmm.
Believing that life is less than, right? Because anybody who engages in these types of policies and practices has to believe that life is less than, because nobody, I don't believe that anybody who thinks like me and values life would engage in that type of practice, right? So,
right.
I mean, that's just the way I see it, right? So, I mean, and the fact that I hear a lot of times, people say, well, nobody was thinking about it back then, or nobody was crying out then. You know, people have been crying out for a long, long time. And nobody, I mean, it's been falling on deaf ears, right? And the fact that people are starting to rise up now and they want to do something about it, I believe that we need to do something already. We need to do something just because it happened in the past, or just because it's been happening forever and people have turned a blind eye, doesn't make it right. Doesn't make it right. And the more that we are standing on the streets, the more time we spend out there trying to get somebody to listen, trying to put pressure on our leaders to make a change, right? I think that's what we have to be doing right now. That's exactly what we have to be doing. And nobody should be saying, well, why didn't you care back then? Doesn't matter why didn't nobody care back then. It doesn't matter why that person wasn't active 2 days ago or why that person is active now. The fact is that they're active and that we're trying to do something and we need to do it now.
Yeah, not tomorrow. You needed to do it
exactly.
yesterday. Let me ask you something. Have there been, now I've read also, I read it, I heard on CNN, that there are children that have been returned to their families?
Yes.
Before I ask you that, have there been families that have been allowed to enter the country?
Okay. So there aren't families who have been allowed to. All these families have been detained, okay? They have been allowed to stay to fight their amnesty case, right?
Okay.
So there's a difference. It's not like they've been granted amnesty already. It's not like they've been granted asylum, but they have been allowed to stay to fight for the asylum case. Now, a lot of these cases that are of people that have been granted to stay are still, they're being released with ankle monitors, okay? So they're being tracked so that they can make sure that they report to court and all those things, right? But they're being released, but they're told they can't work. Now, you're talking about a whole, a family who can't, they're not allowed to work, and they can't access government benefits to help them because need the Social Security number for that.
So how are they
going to
eat and where are they going to live? And
exactly.
How are they going to eat? How are they going to survive?
Exactly. So our government has put in place, right, they're like, okay, so we're going to let you out, but hey, make it on your own, but don't work, right? You can't legally work in the U.S., or because if you do, you are in violation of our law, and that is a felony charge, right? So it is our immigration system messed up.
Did you just say, if they go to work, it's a felony?
It is a felony to be an undocumented worker in the country is a felony, yes. If you are caught, you will serve jail time for that.
Yeah, after you serve the time, they just send you back.
You serve the time, and there's a possibility that they might send you back. Most of the time you are, but I was just reading an article the other day, I can't remember the name of the state where she was from, but she was released after serving, I believe it was like 4.5 years, for working at a meatpacking factory, a chicken factory, in her state, and her son was 11 months old. Okay, when she got caught working this chicken factory, she was sent to jail. And because she was sent to jail, the judge ruled that she abandoned her child and gave that child up for adoption.
Whoa.
Okay. Right. So.
Let me see if I got the story right. She got, mm-hmm. got caught working at a chicken factory, and her child was 11 months old, her in jail, and they said that she abandoned her child.
Yes.
Wow, that is
took her
that
rights
is
away.
Cruel. That's cruel. So
that is.
So is this like regular? Did this happen on a regular basis to folks that come across the border? Is this a regular occurrence?
It absolutely does. This happens on a regular basis to families. Just right now, I was reading an article in USA Today that talks about 450 parents who have already been deported without their children. So these children are now left orphaned in the United States while their parents are back home. So how are they going to determine which children belong to who, which country they're supposed to be going back to?
Them in foster care. They might just keep them in foster care here.
And so, and that's a problem, right? Because first of all, our countries are talking about how, that they're not supposed to be here, that they waste American dollars on trying to keep these families here, or that they were a burden, right, to our economy, but yet you are going.
Oh, sorry. Hold it now.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And now you're. Oh, that's okay. And it's like, but you're going to keep them here in foster care, which is operated by American, you know what I'm saying, taxpayers' money, which you're already complaining about, instead of, trying to find out where these children go, where they belong, and allowing them due process, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of these children, too, and these families. Because entering the country without authorization is just a misdemeanor, right? You don't get legal representation, right? You don't have a right to an attorney, and one will be appointed to you if you can't pay for one. And so a lot of them are going to court not understanding what's going on. Just like the other day, I was reading about a 2-year-old child who was in the courtroom, and the judge was even embarrassed to have to ask the 2-year-old baby if he understood immigration law. And that baby asked for water in Spanish, he asked for agua, and this is what's going on in our courtrooms across the country, and
welcome to the criminal justice system. Welcome to the criminal justice system.
Exactly, and it is terrible, right? Because, they're not allowed due process, right? They don't have access to the attorneys, and a lot of the attorneys that are doing this work are doing it pro bono, or they're nonprofits, right? Who are already low on in funds, and so it's really difficult to be out there fighting, right? Fighting at these war zones, right? So the courtroom is the war zone, right? Our border is the war zone because they are actively engaging in these atrocities across our border, right? They're actively doing this. And I really just, I don't understand it myself. Like I said, it goes way back to the founding of this country. And it's a
Melinda,
mentality, it's
Melinda,
a mindset that has, yes.
Melinda, I understand.
Yes.
If these folks were from Canada, if these folks were from Europe, if these folks were from Australia, they wouldn't be experiencing these problems. There are certain cultures that, I don't know, the United States frowned upon. What happened to that statement on the Statue of Liberty? They said, give me your poor, give me your, whatever it said, I haven't seen it in years.
Your child, your huddled masses, yes.
You know, what happened to that?
To breathe free, absolutely.
I could go with the, even when the, when certain European countries came over in the 30s and the 20s and the 10, early 20th century, you know, they had to stay at Ellis Island. All right, I understand they got to go through paperwork and make sure the person is safe, who they are. But separating, they did not separate families. When they were done with the process, they went off to Five Corners, which is the Battery, down in Manhattan, and started their lives, you know. And here you are, you guys spend years at a detention center or possibly jailed before you're allowed. If I was there trying to come across, I would say, like, wow. You know, I'm breaking my neck to get to this.
Mm-hmm.
If the beginning of the process is difficult and prejudiced and racist, what's going to happen once I enter? What's going to happen to me and my family? What kind of laws and legislation are going to be against me to try to make progress in this nation?
And that is the fear amongst in the immigrant community, right? Just immigrant communities, right? But just minority communities in general because of racial profiling. Even if you have already been granted stay, or you have gone through the detention center, you have gone through this whole process, this immigration process that is inhumane and racist. And then you are granted a visa or you're granted some kind of legal stay, you are still not out of the scope. You are still targeted for racial profiling because of the Department of ICE, right?
Oh, I know about racial profiling. I got experience in racial profiling, so I know what you mean. Explain to me, what is Mississippi Immigrants Rights Alliance doing to address this issue?
Okay, so like I said, we've been taken to the streets. We have been just in our state, right? We have Civic Engagement Day. Mississippi Immigrants Rights Alliance fights for the rights of immigrants, of all immigrants in the state of Mississippi, okay? So we go every year to our Capitol and engage our legislators, and we try to promote legislation that is favorable for the immigrant community, and we actively act against anti-immigrant laws. In the state alone, since the founding of MIRA, which is the Mississippi Immigrants Rights Alliance, we have been able to stop over 300 anti-immigrant bills that were introduced at the Capitol, right, during the legislative session. So I'm happy to be a part of this organization that has been successful in stopping anti-immigrant bills from becoming law in the state, right? But that's what we do. We actively engage our legislators, our leaders, to promote change that needs to happen, right? So right now, we have been engaging in protests. We have been engaging at Congress, right? We just recently were in Washington. Our legal project director, Patricia Ives, we went to Washington, and we were there actively speaking with our congressmen and, you know, trying to just let them know what it's like for immigrant families in our state and across the country. And you know, just sharing, right? I also have my best friend, my partner, right? Nathan Loches Fairley. He is the executive director of the Falcon Group, and he has taken to the streets with me. Reginald Virgil, who co-hosts Keep Calm, Let's Discuss Racism with T. Nathan Fairley. And they have, you know, come to the streets with me actively trying to get the community involved to stop this, because something needs to be done. I've said many times that it didn't matter if I was the only one standing in the street yelling as loud as I could for somebody to hear, that I would continue to do it even if it fell on deaf ears, because that is how much I believe in what we are doing, that our country is engaging in inhumane practices, has always been engaging in these kinds of practices because of the mindset of that birthed this country, which is superiority, right? White supremacy. That is the bottom line, you know? All these institutions of government, all these systems in place were founded from that time. And although we
Sorry for cutting you off. A question just popped in my mind. Have you been in touch? Well, first of all, let me ask, are there any Republicans that are Latinos or Latino Republicans
in the state of Mississippi?
No.
Congress,
D.C., Mississippi, D.C., any legislators that come from parents that were immigrants, that are specifically Latinos, that are Republicans?
I believe it is. Some of them recently ran for the presidential
election. What is their view about this issue?
I can't speak for them, right? I have not really engaged in the state of Mississippi. Their view is that they stand behind the president. Right. But that's just Republicans in general, and they're not Latinos. I know that the majority of people in the U.S., including Republicans and Democrats, believe that something needs to be done, believe that this is atrocious, right? That this shouldn't be happening. But like I said, I can't speak for them. I know that there is Democrats, right, that are actively speaking out against this. I really don't know, like, the Republicans who they're backing up their president, correct? Most of them. I really don't have an answer to that.
So when are you going to run for office?
Well,
you sound like a political novice there. It sounds like you're entering politics there.
You know, I, You know, I've thought about it, you know, but I really don't know if I want to be the one who I really don't. We need to hold our politicians accountable, right? So I don't know about if I want to be on. I think I just want to hold our politicians accountable, actually. I want to hold our leaders accountable. I want to make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Maybe one day I will run for office, but right now I am happy with our community, right? I'm happy people power, right? I am happy being actively engaged in the community and giving them resources so that they can empower themselves, so they can be out there doing exactly what, you know, creating more leaders so that maybe somebody will rise up to that from within the community, right? And
right.
I'm happy doing that, giving them these tools necessary. But you make me a little bit nervous when you try to put me in that group.
Now, let me ask you this. How widespread is the border crisis existing? Like, is it Arizona, Texas, and Mississippi, or just Texas and Arizona? You know, how widespread is it? Is it all three states? All four states, rather?
So you're talking about the whole southern border, right? So that
right.
goes all the way from Texas, California, Arizona, right? Those three right there, okay? It starts there, and then when they're being released to their sponsor families or whoever their sponsors are, they're being released all across the country. So we do see some of these, right? So we do see some of these, right, asylees, right, coming to the state of Mississippi, who I have engaged and encountered, and like I said, I've heard terrible, terrible stories. And a lot of the children, too, they're being housed in places like New York, Chicago, and some of these centers are also in Texas, right? But once they leave these centers and are reunited with their family, some of them are reunited here in the U.S. and then deported, or some of them have given the opportunity to be able to fight their asylum case within the state so they don't have to go back. They're not deported, right? But yeah, so it's not just affecting our border; it's going all across our country, right? And I mean, the biggest thing that we're also seeing is, you know, they can't work; they're not given permission, legal authorization to work. So it's really difficult because if they do get caught working, like I said, they are also subject to consequences.
Don't they get some type of card to permit them to work, or they got to wait for that?
They have to wait for that, and that's only if they are granted that so they can continue staying in the U.S. But the families that I have recently seen come out of detention are not authorized to work in the country, okay? So they are dependent totally on their sponsors. Now understand also that some of the sponsors are also undocumented, okay? So even they run risk because you're putting them in a system that is actively looking for them. So if you've been released to an undocumented sponsor, the country already has their information as well. So if they want to come for the family, like ICE has actively been engaging in, they will come for them. And
ICE
that
is the boogeyman, huh? ICE is your modern-day boogeyman.
It is. It's a modern-day boogeyman, and we have to keep a watch over our shoulder, right? Because one, you don't know when they're coming, right? It's not like they're riding around with their trucks that say ICE on them. They're
right.
dressed like regular people. Like a civilian coming to your door. Yes. Undercover. Coming to your door at whatever time of day that they please and ambushing you. Right? Or they're coming to your workplace. Or they're waiting outside of courthouses targeting you. Saying, hey, that person over there, they kind of look like they're an immigrant. They look like an undocumented person. Please tell me again what an undocumented person looks like.
Right.
I've asked people this question.
Without probable cause.
Well, right.
That's another example of racial profiling.
That they are allowed to do, and that is the most messed up part about this. I want to cuss, but I'm not going to. That is the most messed up part about this, right? Is that, you know, we have laws, there are supposed to be laws in place to protect us from that, right? But
right.
It's
called human rights laws. It's called
exactly.
Human rights laws.
And these agents that work for the government are allowed to legally engage in this kind of practice without repercussions, okay? Without so much as a slap on the wrist. I can be pulled over at any time or stopped outside of a federal courthouse building or stopped outside of any police station, wherever ICE is, and they can ask me for my documents. They can ask me if I am a U.S. citizen of this country, okay? Legally ask me that. They can legally violate my rights. They can, and I don't understand that. We have been without, since 2005, 2005 was the creation of ICE, right? That's when they created ICE. But before that, we didn't have ICE, right? The country didn't need it back then. It doesn't need it now. This ICE needs to be abolished. They need to do away with this department.
It costs too much money. They're not going to abolish it. It costs too much money. This is big money for them. It's big money.
It
costs a lot of money to house and to jail people. It costs a lot of money to put people in prisons. And ICE is backed by the government as well as corporations.
Absolutely, because that's it. Why do you think, this is like, I've heard people say all the time, right? That they should just send them back. They should just, once they get to the border, they should just deport them. Why house them in detention facilities? If your concern is that these immigrants put a burden on our economy, why are you housing them in these detention facilities? Why aren't you turning them away? Because it pays you more to house,
mm-hmm.
to keep them here. That's the truth, right? So this is just a big moneymaker for them. This whole immigration system is a big moneymaker for this country. And
the next couple of minutes, why don't you sum up about what you do and how they get anyone want to get in contact with you about this situation?
Okay. I have an office located, and we have two offices, right? Our main office is located in Jackson, Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have an office on the Mississippi Gulf Coast in Biloxi, Mississippi. Our telephone number is 601-968-5162. You can call us at any time. We are always looking for volunteers. We are always, like I said, or anybody who has a question that they want to ask, anybody who wants to participate in any of the events that we have going on, we have a Facebook page, which is the Mississippi Immigrants Rights Alliance. Our website is www.yourmita.wordpress.com. And you can see what we're all about. There's also a video that was documented for our Civic Engagement Day, where we had a camera crew follow us around throughout the day and see us actively engage our legislators. We had a community there with the community members with us. It was a really great video that was part of a series of the first 101 days, when Trump came into office, and it was produced through Firelight Media. So you can also see that on our website. And you'll see me, actively there with the community members. And I am just so proud of that group. that has been members with us since I first started working with his organization, who I've seen grow into their power. And it's beautiful because a lot of people believe that a lot of people believe that they don't have rights, or that you don't deserve any rights because they have labeled you as
illegal.
A lot of
people don't even know their rights. So we need folks like you to continue to fight for people that are not empowered, that need empowerment, that need information, that need advocacy. And also, Melinda, don't be a stranger. I'd like to invite you back because I know this this is an ongoing situation. And when I saw your picture and they yelling at somebody, I said, hey, immigrants, oh. Because I've been trying to find somebody to come on to discuss this issue. Because a lot of people feel like we all basically have people of color, we all have this same issue. Look at the ban that they placed on the people from the Middle East. Nobody from the Middle East, anyway, people without money, could come over here. But other cultures come back and forth, have double citizenship, triple citizenship. And like you said, where's the fairness of it all?
You're right. You're absolutely right. I hope that next time that we do come on a show, I would like to have my best friend with me, Troy, Nathan Locus Fairley, come on a show with us if that's possible from the Falcon Group, and you know we can all discuss this together. And he's a really great person for you to also speak with as well on these.
I will give you a call within a week, and we can schedule for next month.
Absolutely, that's great. Thank you so much.
Okay, all right. So Melinda, I thank you for coming on the show. And I thank you for putting up with my lack of technical skills, hitting buttons I don't have no business hitting. So, good luck.
Oh, not a problem.
Be safe out there. Okay?
Farewell.
Okay.
Thank you for having me on the show, and you have a good night.
Okay, you too. And good night. I will call you, most definitely.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
You're welcome. Well, you know what, folks? I'm not surprised. I am not surprised from the treatment of people of color. And also this, if those children go in foster care is one of the worst systems for kids in America. I know 15 years ago, they tried to do away with foster care in New York City, but it became a monster. Foster care is almost $1 billion industry. Almost $1 billion. And the kids stay there till they're 18, and then they dropped off at a men's or women's shelter. And sometimes, and then they go from home to home to home. So we really cannot be separating these families. But as black folks, they've been taking our children for hundreds and hundreds of years. What is it with the United States about separating families? What type of person think like that? Another week. And I want y'all to be careful this week, be safe this week, and especially to Melinda, you know, because, you know, the agent for ICE could get a little violent. Okay, folks, that's it for this week. As I always sign off, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night.
Hold it now.